Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Jeannie and Bill Stayskull. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting, entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Today's topic, what is parenting? Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Hi, welcome to Parenting Matters. It is a pleasure and honor to be hosting this initial show on WBOU 100.5 FM. Thank you for listening. Our special guest today is an excellent pediatrician, mother of two, and an outstanding citizen. She is a deputy director of the Tennessee Department of Health, Division of Family Health and Wellness. She practiced in Franklin, Tennessee before joining the Tennessee Department of Health. We will introduce Dr. Michelle later in the show. We have a great show for you today. In it, we will define parenting, what its goals are, what it is, and what it is not. Then we'll talk about some ways to make parenting easier. I'm sure you will enjoy it. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Barbara and Andy Rittler. Originally from Philadelphia, now live in Brentwood. They are parents of four wonderful children and attend Holy Family Catholic Church in Brentwood. But first, my monologue. Soon after releasing my parenting book, Tools for Effective Parenting, my wife Mary and I were invited to a series of talks about parenting and cultural change at a Sunday school in Brentwood Methodist Church. During the third session, one of the men remarked that the class was so different from what he thought it would be. "It's more about doing the right thing than pediatrics," he said. "I thought pediatricians only treated sick kids, did physicals, and gave shots. This class is more of a how to live a good life than how to parent, isn't it?" "What a great observation," I answered. "It sounds like you have the message 100% right. It's a how to be a parenting class, not a how to parent class. I'm glad you noticed the difference." How to be a parent classes or books start with a parent. If parent does this, the child will do that. How to parent books start with the child. If the child does this, parents should do that. This latter type of parenting has the cart before the horse. Mm. These parents try to lead from behind. That just doesn't work. Where parenting from behind has led us, and why we need to change our focus, is apparent from today's statistics. Every day in the United States, 1,825 kids are abused or neglected. 4 abused kids die each day. 5 kids commit suicide. 7 are killed by firearms. And 4,500 kids are arrested each and every day. Something must change. I spoke last fall to the Irish and American Pediatric Society and challenged pediatricians to teach people how to be better parents. If we pediatricians would dedicate ourselves to learn more about good parenting, we could do a better job of teaching parents. Pediatricians using immunizations have all but eradicated polio, measles, rubella, H. influenza meningitis, and many other diseases. The American Academy of Pediatrics Back to Sleep program has cut deaths from sudden infant death syndrome in half. Now we can do the same to the mortality forced upon our kids, our families, and our world by moving the cart back behind the horse. Now you might ask, and you should, who died and appointed you a parenting guru? Well, I don't pretend to know all the answers, but my wife Mary and I have raised 4 very successful kids. I've spent half a century studying children, families, and society, and I have been instructing parents for many decades. I know that something has to change or our society will not survive. I ask your forbearance and your help in making these changes. Too often pediatricians, and I am one, other parenting experts and parents think parenting is about the children. But the first word in parenting is parent. Parenting is about the parent. Let me tell you my 3-pronged program to make parenting easier. First of all, take care of your spouse and yourself. If you don't make it, the children will suffer. It's like the airline staff telling, if the captain loses pressure, put your mask on first, then put a mask on your children. They imply you can't help them if you're unconscious. All parents know that the first few weeks at home, babies are very time-consuming. But after a month or two, baby needs to adjust to the parent's schedule. After all, the parents were there first, and the child came to live with them. He or she needs to adapt. Most importantly, parents should plan a date night once every week until the last child goes off to college. Don't let your kids or your sitter ever interrupt your date unless they call the police, the ambulance, or the fire department first. Part of your job is to teach your children independence. Best of all, you'll find that when the kids are gone, you'll still have your best friend to continue to date, love, and even more than once a week for the rest of your lives. Now, we recognize that many kids have single parents. We'll talk later in the show about how these men and women can be and are also great parents. In the weeks ahead, we will have a special guest to help us develop a plan for these hardworking parents. Prong two, don't sweat the small stuff. When I was a pediatric resident, Mary and I had three preschool boys filled with mischief. So I asked one of the pediatric nurses, a seasoned mother of several grown children, what I should do. In short, she told me, first ask yourself if what they are doing will harm them or others. If not, then ask yourself, will they still be doing it in 5 years? If so, get on them. But remember, they are little kids, and most of the things they do that irritate you and your wife, they won't be doing in 5 years. It's all small stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff, she asks. Think about it. Kids will eventually stop throwing the toys out of the toy box and the pots and pans out of the kitchen cupboards. They'll learn to brush their teeth and take a shower. But kids are messy. Get used to it while they are learning to be neat. Eat what you and your spouse like and put some of it on your kids' plates. If they don't like it, that's okay. Don't beg, cajole, bribe, or show any concern that they didn't eat. They'll get hungry enough to eat long before they starve or become vitamin deficient, and they'll learn to love a wide variety of foods. As they get older, provide a place for them to do their homework. Don't do it for them or sit with them. Rather, read a book or work on a hobby. But don't think you can watch TV while they are forced to work. They'll tell you it isn't fair, and it isn't. The third and probably the most important prong is to be the kind of person you want your children to become. Kids do what they see their parents do. Many years ago, I was walking down a street in Milwaukee, and I noticed a young man ahead of me holding a toddler's hand. When the light turned red, Dad squatted to talk with his son. What do you think son did? You're right. He squatted just like his dad. Study after study shows that the parent's behavior is the number one factor that determines a child's adult behavior. If you want your kids to become men and women of character, be a man or woman of character. Now, I'm sure many of you wonder if these three little efforts, take care of your spouse and yourself, don't sweat the small stuff, and be the person you want your child to become, will really make parenting easier. They will. And we'll talk more about them in the coming weeks. Now I have the honor of introducing Dr. Michelle Fiskus to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM. Dr. Fiskus is a pediatrician, mother, and wife, and works for the Department of Health. Welcome, Dr. Fiskus. It's a real pleasure to have you on my first Parenting Matters show. You were the president-elect of the Tennessee chapter of the AAP when I moved to Tennessee, and I will always be grateful for your part in naming me the Senior Pediatrician of the Year way back in 2014. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Parr. Thanks for inviting me. It's an honor.
Well, I tell you, pleasure is all mine. Dr. Fiskus, what do you think of my program for the 21st century, parenting? Did I hit it out of the ballpark, or did I make a big mess of it?
I think you hit a pretty good home run. You know, a lot of what you mentioned in your three prongs resonates with me, both as a parent of teenagers right now and also as a pediatrician, modeling the way for your children, being the person that you want your children to grow up to be, and not sweating the small stuff. We kind of live by that at the Fiskus House. Picking the battles. If the socks don't match, It really doesn't matter. If we want to wear shorts and it's a cold day outside, the worst thing that's going to happen to that child is they're going to get cold that day. And so that's how lessons are learned and how children explore their world and explore their environment and learn to make different decisions the next time if they went wrong the first time. So I really appreciate your advice.
Oh, thank you. Doctor, we talked a little bit before the show about sudden infant death. And I was just thinking, in Tennessee, 1,000 kids under the age of 18 die every year.
That's right.
Half of them, or a little more than half of them, are under the age of one. And most of them died from prematurity or congenital anomalies. But more than 50 over the age of one are killed. And another 47 die of suicide. You've had many years' experience in pediatrics. What do you think we can, as pediatricians, and what we should do about so many fatalities in childhood?
Now, there are so many different reasons why those 1,000 children in Tennessee die every year. Some of those are natural causes, like prematurity or congenital birth defects, like you mentioned. And when it comes to prematurity, making sure that pregnant mothers have the prenatal care that they need, that happens early on, that they get the support they need, that they have access to good medical care, and that when those babies are born, that they're brought into homes that have the best possible environment to raise that child in wellness. So not having homes where smokers are present, making sure that that child has a safe place to sleep, and that's a place that is just for them, that is near the parents but not in bed with the parents, and that is free of anything except a baby and a mattress and nothing else, because we have about 140 babies a year in Tennessee that are still dying because they're in unsafe sleep circumstances. Mm-hmm. And those are 140 deaths that can be 100% avoided if we can get the message out that babies need to sleep in their own space, on their back, and with nothing else in their crib or their sleep space except for them.
That's such an important thing, Michelle. You know, every time I talk to a doctor about health, smoking comes up. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what we would do as a country if every day 3 mega jets fell out of the sky and everybody in them got killed. And yet that many kids are killed. I mean, many people die every day from smoking. And then we talk about secondhand smoke. But I read last week about third-hand smoke. Mm-hmm. And I think third-hand smoke is what kills some of those babies, isn't it?
Right. Third-hand smoke is the exposure that those babies have to the chemicals that come off of those cigarettes and that combusted tobacco. You know, we have a very high rate of smoking in Tennessee, and there's reasons for that. We're an agricultural state. Tobacco was a huge crop. It still is in a lot of areas. And there's this multi-generational history of smoking. So my grandparents did it. My parents did it. I'm going to do it. Oftentimes, children get their first cigarette from their parent. And so it's a cultural phenomenon in this state that we're really working very hard, especially at the Tennessee Department of Health and through all of the departments of health across the state in trying to battle. But the exposure of those children to the effects of smoking, I mean, these are children who don't choose to smoke, and yet are impacted by the people who smoke around them. And we know that children are more likely to die from SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, if they're exposed to second and third-hand smoke in the home. So one of the most important things that a pregnant woman can do for the health of her baby is to stop smoking while she's pregnant and continue not smoking after the baby's born, and then to encourage the people who are in that child's life to also not smoke.
It's so important. You know, I sort of think about third-hand smoke, and if you walk into someone's house, even if they haven't smoked for years, when you sit down on the sofa, this awful reeking smell comes out of there, and that's that third-hand smoke, which is also important to avoid. Michelle, did you, you know, we talked this a little bit about single parent in the beginning, and not that they're different from regular parents, but they're more stressed, it's more difficult for them. What did you do in your practice to help the single parent? I mean, it has to be really hard for them.
it can be incredibly hard for them. And I am in awe of our single parents. You know, no parent sets out to raise a child by themselves, or very few do. There are some that do intentionally. But, you know, single parents sometimes are in that circumstance because their partner has died, and they have the stress of losing that loved one. In some cases, it's a pregnancy that was unintended, and there's not a partner in the relationship. I think as a community, as a church, as a medical society, those are people that we need to wrap our arms around and have grace for, and provide support for. And in understanding, you know, if we can think back to what it was like when our children were young, even in two-parent households, and how stressful that was, and how, you know, when your spouse came home from work, the first thing he did was hand off the baby, because it doesn't matter how stressful their day was, yours was worse. And so, you know, in a single-parent household, that parent may not have any option to hand that child off to someone. And I think we as a community, as a church family, can offer those types of breaks for those parents. And that's something that can be done at no cost to anyone but their time and their love and their compassion for their fellow humans, to call or offer to a single parent to say, you know, hey, let me watch the baby for a little while tonight, and you go take a break.
You know, John, our producer, was telling me a few weeks ago that he had to run off that afternoon because that evening he and his wife were babysitting the neighbor's kids, because she was a single mother for the past 9 months while her husband was in Afghanistan or Syria or someplace. And I thought, what a heroic thing that was to do.
That's right. That's a beautiful
thing. Michelle, before we go on, I want to just ask you a little bit, what effect do you think poverty has on the raising of children?
Poverty has every effect on raising children, both, you know, in the single parent kind of situations, but even in things like sudden infant death syndrome. You know, when we're talking about children who die in infancy, and it may be easy for us to say, well, just don't do that. Just don't put your baby down in a place that isn't safe. Just don't smoke around your child. Well, you know, this may be a family that has to work multiple jobs in multiple places just to keep the lights on and the heat on. Or it may be a family that's having to live with another family or a relative and therefore might not have a safe place to put their child to sleep at night. Or if that child starts yelling and or crying in the night, maybe they're at risk of being put out by the family that they're staying with. And so those babies end up in the bed with those parents. So even from the very beginning of just surviving infancy, poverty is huge. And then lack of resources, food insecurity for these families. You know, if a child's main source of nutrition is coming from their school, and then they're going home and they don't have adequate nutrition for them at home, or if snow happens or there's a threat of snow in Tennessee and schools get shut down, then that may be two meals that child misses that day that they're not going to get at home. And we all know that nutrition or lack of it affects our ability to learn, affects our ability to stay in school and to stay healthy.
Good. Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate your kind words and your views on parenting. I hope to have you back again sometime.
I would love it. Thanks, Bar.
Please join me in welcoming Mr. and Mrs. Rittler to Parenting Matters, WBOU 100.5 FM. Welcome, Barbara and Andy.
Hi, Bar.
And thanks so much for agreeing to come talk with us today. It is indeed a pleasure having you on our very first show. Andy and I met at Holy Family in the Men's Book Club, which meets every Friday morning at 6:15. I didn't even know there was a 6:15 anymore. But we meet every Friday, and it's a phenomenal program. And Andy, please tell me a bit about yourself and introduce Barbara to us and our listeners.
Thank you, Park. It's great to be here. Barbara and I met when we were 29 years old in the Philadelphia area. We met through work. And we were married pretty quickly and had three children, you know, right away, three children in 3 years. Our career took us from Philadelphia to Chicago and eventually here in Nashville, where we moved here about 14 years ago, and along came our son, Jack, about 13 years after our first child was born. So we live here now in this area. I'm a healthcare executive, and Barb does a lot of things both in the home and outside of the home as well.
Good. Barbara, how is parenting going for you?
It's going well, Par. It has its good days and bad days. It's always challenging, but we always remember we have to keep our head in the game It's not about us, and we really have to rely on one another and the greater community to help
Barbara,
us with this parenting.
What issues did you face with your older children that you didn't face with the younger, or you're handling them differently, perhaps?
Well, I feel when the older children, they were so close in age, and as a parent, I felt that I was more in survival mode than I was not survival mode. It was physically challenging to take care of the three children being so close in age. And then when they got older and they were involved in all of their activities, that was hard to manage as well. And now with Jack, he's our only child. And I'm not raising him like he's an only child, but he is technically an only child. His other siblings aren't around, and I'm doing things a little differently.
Well, good. I'm sure I know you're doing a good job with your younger son because I see him quite often. But your older boy and your daughters, they're very wonderful too, so I think you've done a great job.
Thank you.
Andy, in the United States, almost every year, 3,000 kids drop out of high school. I mean, every day, pardon me, every day. And 16,000, can you imagine, 16,000 kids are suspended from school. What do you think is going on? Do you think our schools are failing the kids, or are parents failing the kids, or what's happening?
You know, it's hard to tell what's happening, but one of the organizations I'm involved with is Boy Scouts, and that brings us back. It gives me a lot of exposure to a lot of different families, a lot of different family structures. And what I, some of the common denominators that I see, Par, and why Barb and I decided to come and talk with you today, was it's about parenting. It's not about the kids today. I think it still gets back to the parents today. And what can we do as parents, and what can parents do to be the best parent that they can be for their children? So the numbers don't surprise me, and I think the numbers are what they are. It's more about how do we go forward and try to help people be the best parents they
you
can.
You know, I get so frustrated every day that I work, because I do physicals on medical, I mean, on candidates for military. And one of the questions we have to ask them is if they ever were suspended from school. And oftentimes they say, yes. And I'll say, what for? Skipping school. So I'll pull my hair out. You got suspended from school for skipping school. I said, that makes a lot of sense. I suppose if I go down and rob the bank, they'll force me to rob three more banks. I mean, that doesn't make sense. What can we do about things like that? Michelle, do you want to join us on that?
Sure. You're right. You know, it just doesn't make sense when you think about that. And there are certainly other ways to address that. You know, if a child is skipping school, sometimes that's because we have a parent who isn't attentive. I think my children know that they probably wouldn't survive skipping school. And you know, in this day and age of cell phones where you can track where your child is, you know, there's no teenager without a cell phone. Then, you know, there is certainly an opportunity for parents to be more involved with that. And those children who are skipping school, you know, I still want to go back to, well, what's that underlying reason why they're doing that? Are they skipping because they don't understand the subjects, that the subjects they're taking aren't engaging, that they're being bullied, that they have a drug problem, and so they're going off campus to use drugs? And I think finding ways to drill down and figure out what is causing that behavior, like any behavior that we see in children that is undesirable, is really important, and that we can, you know, do a lot more around that.
So it sounds like our parents need to be more involved in the schools.
Right, and just in our children's lives in general. Yeah. You know, family dinner is probably one of the most important things that a family can do to stay connected with their children. You have teenagers, they're coming and going, but if dinner is expected, that we're all going to sit at the table and have this discussion, then it's going to be a lot less likely that your child's going to disappear from school the next day, because there's going to be a talk.
Yeah. You know, you brought up the dinner with the family, and I have a good friend who is a dietitian, and she said, we can never have dinner together because of all the reasons that you mentioned, her kids were in high school, so we have breakfast together. And she said, if we have breakfast and we're getting it late and they miss the bus, they might miss first hour's class too, but I can send them an excuse, because I think having dinner together or breakfast together is more important than that first hour of class. How do you manage your kids when they were, all three of those older ones were in high school?
Well, we did manage to have dinner together. Mm-hmm. We pushed the dinner hour later. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you mentioned dinner together because of the 14 years difference. Our youngest of the older three, she said, even though it's Jack just at home by himself, you need to make sure that you still sit around that dinner table with him. There doesn't have to be all six of us, because I remember back when I was growing up, that was the most important thing I remember about being a family, is having that. So don't you take any shortcuts, she was telling us. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really at the time know what I was doing. It was just the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. You know, we always had dinner together, and it was the thing to do.
But it surprises me today how many parents eat their dinner standing over the sink instead of sitting at the table.
Well, Par, we still do that at home sometimes by mistake, and we'll catch one another and say, hey, come on, let's grab a seat here, let's do this. Yeah. I think one of the big differences for us being second wave parents is we very consciously have said, how do we want to parent? We haven't reacted to what society has pulled the kids into. We've literally said, well, we can't do this activity, because if we do that activity, then that will take us away from this, which is more important to us, which is being together, getting together and doing those things. So we're human. You know, I'll stand by the sink and Barb will say, will you please come sit by the table? And it's great, you know, because we need that reminder.
And we need to have the TV turned off too, don't we?
We have a TV-free zone. When we moved into our house, we have an area where we're really fortunate to have a nice, you know, kitchen and kind of sitting area there. And we told everybody from the very beginning there will never be a TV in this area here. Mm-hmm. So there are some things that you just have to draw a line in the sand on it and do it.
So you have to be in control or you get chaos, is that right?
Well, I like chaos theory. You know, I think chaos theory is kind of fun, but you do have to only let it go so far. It goes back to what you said earlier. I think it was your second point, was don't sweat the small mm-hmm. stuff. Which part of the chaos is not good, and which part of the chaos is hurtful and is going to take you into a tough place? Mm-hmm. And these are gut calls you have to make sometimes when things are going. But the main thing is you have to be actively involved. You can't you just can't be a spectator as a parent.
Well, you know, there's so many other things we should be talking about, and time has gone away already. I don't even know what happened to it. But we're going to have a program soon about the village, because you say it takes a village, and it does take a village. Mm-hmm. And I think we had more advantage of village in the old days. We'll come to talk about that. And then we want to talk about, you mentioned cell phones, and we want to talk about discipline. Next time we're going to be talking about discipline. Mm-hmm. So that will be a program you'll not want to miss. Mm-hmm. But before I say goodbye, I want to thank our listeners and invite you all to come back and tune in to see us again. We will be talking about important subjects to you. If you have something you want us to talk about, you send me a note on my website, parentingwithdrparr.com, or leave a message on WBOU 100.5 FM. Now let's wrap us up by saying, over the next few weeks, a couple things I'd like you to think about. First, get together with your friends and start a couples parenting book club in your church, your synagogue, or in your temple. Make every effort to invite single parents. Trouble, we leave single parents out too much, but invite some single parents and some who are financially challenged to join your group. Second, keep learning, keep evolving, keep growing, keep loving your spouse. That's so important. Be the kind of person you want your child to become. And lastly, but don't forget, tell your friends about Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM.
Thank you for listening to Parenting Matters with Dr. Par Donahue, brought to you by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Jeannie and Bill State School. For more information about Dr. Par, visit his website at www.parentingwithdrparr.com.